Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm good. I think somebody on Twitter pointed out that they've legitimately got Japanese certification, that they are a certified Japanophile. So I was thinking that it's probably not a bad idea for us to start an Abroad Japan official Japanophile certification class. I mean, this is how the Trump University's got started. I think we could make a bit of cash here, to be honest, Chris.
Absolutely. I mean, what would it entail, getting the certificate? Get Natsuki involved somehow.
Have a conversation with Natsuki for 5 minutes.
And then, any language. You know,
in any language. I love.
It's a test unto
music.
Itself.
And then we'd go down the 100 yen shop and buy some, I don't know, Pokemon or Hello Kitty headed note paper. And we'd write, "You have passed" on it. Signed, Chris Broad and Pete Donaldson.
Well, this is not a bad idea, actually. I've been thinking about what we could do with this podcast going forward, and that is, to be honest, that's a pretty good direction. I'm going to make some notes in my imaginary notebook on this. people always ask me what you require to become a certified Japanophile, and the answer is, I don't know. Just come to Japan two or three times a year like Pete. That's all you've basically done, isn't it?
It's definitely one of the most important parts of our syllabus is eating three or four coolishes. I have had so many tweets this week about coolish, and I'm loving them, quite frankly. What I need to do is combine all of these pictures and sentences together on Twitter and posts and send them to the coolish company and say, "Listen, I am your biggest fan. Let me in your factory. I want to swim in your baths of coolish." Let me in your factory.
A tub of liquid, reasonably priced ice cream. I guess as summer rolls in, and it's now getting towards summer, you're going to see that happen a lot. A lot of people are just going to be buying coolish and tweeting you, given that is basically what people associate with you now. Liquid ice cream in a bag. Fair play. Then again, I've been promoting Kit Kats and KFC for 5 years now in Japan, and I've got nothing,
sure,
even Marmite, and so don't expect anything good to happen, Pete. Don't expect Coolish to come crying for sponsorship deals.
I wonder who they're owned by. I'm going to find out. I'm going to email them and say, "Look, get me some Coolish. Get me a supply of Coolish I can enjoy in England. Get me an import deal, and let's do business, people. Let's do business."
I mean, I'd love to know how many people actually bought Coolish ice cream thanks to you. Thanks to you alone.
We're in the 30s, I reckon. We're in the 30s, definitely.
30, 40 people.
30, 40 people. Year. And you cannot argue with that profit margin, Coolish Industries.
Well, to be fair, I am one of those people. I never had Coolish squeezy ice cream from any major convenience store. I've never had it until you went on about it for several weeks in a row, and I thought, I better try this ice cream that Pete loves so much. I went down to 7-Eleven and bought it for 200 yen or whatever it costs, and it's good. It's actually a good product.
And it's this like podcast definitely isn't sponsored by Coolish.
No,
just
but
it's good.
But it should be.
You've got to try it at least once.
It's like a milky. They've made a new Capri Suns in England. Used to be straw foil packet, straw pierced through foil packet. Drink the old Capri Sun. Nowadays they've got like an isotonic kind of sports bottle top, and that's basically the configuration of Coolish. If I wasn't, you know, if I was a more cynical man, I'd say that the Coolish Tetra Pak and the new Capri Sun Tetra Pak exactly the same. So we've got the delivery mechanism. Let's talk licensing.
Can't you just get a Capri Sun and squeeze some Haagen-Dazs vanilla ice cream into it?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, effectively, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is effectively just frozen kind of Mr. Whippy, which, of course, Margaret Thatcher was involved in the genesis, weirdly enough. When she was a chemist, yeah. From Margaret
Thatcher
to Coolish.
It's amazing where this podcast goes in the first 5 minutes, isn't it? Talk about Margaret Thatcher's policies on ice cream. Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Abroad Japan podcast. Today, I'm going to kick things off by reading an email we received the other day from Kyle, a chap who lives in Tokyo, who's going up to Fukushima to visit the area that's recently opened around the nuclear reactor. His email reads, "Hey Chris and Pete, I live in Tokyo and normally listen to the podcast while sitting in dreadful Tokyo traffic on my way to work in the mornings. I'm planning a trip to Tomioka in Fukushima to take pictures of the abandoned or mostly abandoned streets and such now that they've opened up to access. I noticed you were in the area for your Pimp My Ride Journey Across Japan episode, but you didn't mention all of the abandoned streets or film any of it. My understanding is that it was open to public around that time and it would make for a dynamite video. Did it just get cut out, or was there some kind of issue that prevented you from getting access? I'm asking because I plan to go there and I would hate it if I had to turn back. Kyle." Yeah, you know what, Kyle? I can think of some slightly more relaxing places to spend your weekend off work as opposed to the surroundings of an exploded nuclear reactor. Nevertheless, to that I say, I haven't actually been to the Fukushima region. The Pimp My Bike episode, we went to the world's largest nuclear power plant, which is in Niigata. Do you remember that, Pete? Do you remember
seeing
that?
Yes, I do. Yes.
There you go. But I haven't been anywhere near the Fukushima nuclear reactor. The closest I've been is Fukushima City, which I think is about 100 kilometres west. I'd probably be a little bit reluctant to go near the reactor to towns like Tomioka, because the radiation, whilst not dangerous for a few days or whatnot, it's still a fair bit higher than the rest of Japan, you know. But after reading this email, I went on Google Maps to look up Tomioka, and it's really interesting. In 2013 and 2015, Google Street View went around Fukushima, around the areas surrounding the nuclear facility, and took photos. And you can actually go on Street View and look around and see the destruction and see this kind of post-apocalyptic wasteland. And I know you've spent the last few minutes looking around it, Pete, and you seem to be in awe of it. What do you make of it?
I think, obviously, it's ethically, it's a bit of a grey area, isn't it? I mean, how can a place get back on its feet? Well, going on Street View is fine. but actually, visiting the place, I'm almost certain, Chris, you did film for 3 days in the Fukushima irradiated area, but you popped a wheelie on your bike and fell off, and you didn't want that footage ever to get out, so you blackballed it and threw the footage in the bin. I think, yeah, it is ethically a bit grey area-y going around, but then you sort of think, well, I mean, it's there. No, like, and how do you expect it's there. How do you expect a place to get back on its feet if you don't, you know, put a bit of money back into the tourism?
Well, this is money back in, is it? It's just walking around it for
the businesses on the outskirts of the area, you know, they've got to shift their Coolish summer, haven't they? Whatever state it's in, and I'll eat it. I'll have the special flavour, the brackish metal flavour of uranium rods. I'll take that. But looking at it on Street View is genuinely eerie, because you can see the 2013 version, 2015. Yeah, it's pretty eerie stuff. You sort of see a few more people around in high-vis jackets, obviously trying to get the place back on its feet. There is something incredibly interesting about that sort of thing. I remember a woman in the early noughties, obviously went to Chernobyl and sort of rode her bike around there, little mini Geiger counter with her and stuff. You can visit these places. It's just obviously just not a lot there, really. But it is fascinating to see what happens after something so epic and dreadful happens. I don't think it's necessarily like pornography, in that you would spend your time sort of, as in, you know, you call them like, you know, like,
how would you make that comparison?
Well, it's not pornography, yeah. As in like people just going to see something dreadful for some kind of weird deep seated kind of emotional need. It's not like that, because there's no one there. It's just visiting the site of something dreadful and hopefully something that never happens again. But obviously it was a massive disaster, and obviously a lot of parts of the area were affected, but obviously this one was affected in a more stark way, because obviously the power station had loads of problems.
Well, what's so interesting about Street View is if you look at 2013 and you just switch over to 2015, you can see how neighbourhoods and streets and houses have been reclaimed by nature, basically.
Yeah,
and that's what I found most fascinating, how quickly nature takes back just takes back human structures and humanity, just reclaims it basically and grows over it. For that reason alone, definitely spend a bit of time on Street View, going through areas like Tomioka or Futaba around the Daiichi nuclear facility. Last year I nearly made a documentary. I was dangerously close to metaphor to actually going to Fukushima and actually doing a documentary about Fukushima and the disaster and the effects. And my main reason was I get a lot of tourists who ask me if it's safe in Tohoku, and it is, you know, it's perfectly safe. The only place I would be worried to go is in the region, you know, 5 kilometre radius around the nuclear reactor. I wouldn't want to spend too long there. They have workers that go in and they have to leave after a few months because they have reached their radiation limit and whatnot, but I wouldn't want to go there. But I did nearly do it because there's a lot of misinformation around Fukushima, a lot of misinformation. People think that it's a lot worse than it is. Now, it is bad. The main problem is psychologically it kind of damaged the mental health of a load of residents that had to leave there. And most people aren't very well educated on radiation at all. The reason I know it's relatively safe is I've spoken to specialists and people that have worked there in the area, and they've kind of given me the lowdown on how bad it is. It's the equivalent of like a few X-rays, but with radiation it's more about time exposure. How long you're actually there is the biggest factor.
And anybody working in an irradiated area will have like a Geiger counter, and that basically will have a counter in it, and once you've experienced more radiation than is necessarily good for you, you basically have to leave. But these levels, you've got to remember, are ridiculously low anyway. It would be the same as if, you know, when you're at school and you had like that lead box and you'd have like a bit of radioactive material and you'd test out a Geiger counter with it and stuff like that, and how incredibly strange it is to see something, you know, emitting particles through different materials. And so like these are internationally recognised levels that you can't be that you shouldn't be exposed to. But this isn't like a best case practice. I shouldn't walk down the street in London and experience so many isobars is it isobars? No, obviously not. shouldn't experience that much radiation. But you know, you get a certain amount from the sun, you get a certain amount from the earth, and this is just obviously a lot higher. But still, nothing that's going to affect anything or your unborn children just by walking down the street for a few hours.
Absolutely. I mean, it's millisieverts. I can never know how to pronounce it. Millisieverts, microsieverts, and sieverts. The three main measurements. And I know Ryotaro actually went into the reactor, not physically inside the reactor, but he went to the nuclear power plant and had a look around. I think he's been there twice, and he had to wear a Geiger counter, you know, to monitor his radiation levels. But he said it was fascinating.
I'd like to do it. I think I find that sort of thing absolutely fascinating, that sort of thing.
Well,
let's do it. Let's do it.
June. Yeah,
let's pop over. I'll land at 6 a.m. Let's go straight to Fukushima, me and you.
there was that Netflix documentary, wasn't there? Netflix series, Dark Tourist, and they went there. And it really annoyed me because they went there and there was like a bus full of people, and they were just the most annoying people.
They all got
out their phones and they stopped off in a town. It might have been Tomioka. And they just got out their phones and just took loads of Instagram photos, and it just felt very superficial and annoying, and it really, really pissed me off. So don't do that. If you come to Fukushima, don't do that, because that's just a bit twatty, and I'll hate you if you do that. But yeah, Fukushima. I also got a lot of comments back in the day. It's not so much now, but after I moved here, 2012, 2013, 2014 in particular, I used to get a lot of, I'm going to call them hate comments or propaganda, but there was a lot of people who are very kind of like cultists or extremists, religious extremists, who saw Fukushima as like an apocalyptic end of the world kind of event.
Right.
And they were coming in the comment sections of my videos and sort of saying, Fukushima's the end of the world, everyone's going to die there. Obviously, that hasn't happened yet.
It was one fairly well-run power station that happened to be damaged by a massive storm and a tsunami, and water got in, and so it irradiated some of the water, and that was the problem. They dealt with it. It's fine.
They'd go on about how at one point the particles of radiation were detected on the west coast of America, right, or North America. A lot of people panicked about this, but then we're talking like particles, like tiny
particles. Yeah, there's more problems with air quality on the west coast of America just because of carbon emissions, forest fires, and you know the output of China. To be honest, it's there's bigger problems in the world than that. We may be facing almost apocalyptic conditions in climate change and all that. But, you know, Fukushima and a power station that's obviously in a slightly sorry state, a manageable sorry state, is definitely not one of them.
Well, it was a propaganda coup for China and South Korea at the time because it made Japan look really bad, which is quite rare in these days in terms of health and safety and whatnot. But it was kind of a propaganda coup. And, yeah, I found it quite ironic given the air quality levels in certainly in China, which are absolutely shocking. I remember when I was there, it was so smoggy and dangerous. And as an asthmatic, I was nearly on the floor dead, admittedly. Much more serious than a little bit of radiation in the forest of Fukushima. But, yeah, I don't know. It's a really frustrating situation. It seems to have died off now. And that's the main reason I backed out of making a documentary about it. I felt like the issues kind of faded away a little bit, certainly in the public eye. If I did do it, I think I'd focus on the people, though, the people of Fukushima and their stories of how it affected them and what they had to do. And that'd be a much more interesting angle than a general sort of overview of what happened.
Just even people just getting back on their feet and how they sort of see the future of Fukushima, talking to, you know, officials, the mayor, stuff like that. Just kind of be fascinating to sort of hear their story.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen,
Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. And join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Or we could just do you, a video about you just walking through Fukushima.
Go on.
Like a counter.
Just trying to get into old 7-Elevens. But it is because Japan's always pictured as being this vibrant, colourful place, and it is in many places. Get out in the sticks. Where we started our little journey across Japan on my little leg down... Lake Biwa. Like that was quite a quiet, sort of leafy kind of quiet sort of part of just a motorway with a hotel on one side and a 7-Eleven and a McDonald's over the road and maybe a toy shop, I think. And that was all just in big corrugated buildings that you could only really access if you had a car. But to see all of these places just completely abandoned, that's basically what you're going to get in the middle of Fukushima, just abandoned buildings. And I can get there in Hartlepool, where I'm from, in the northeast of England.
Once again, not doing a very good job promoting your your native Hartlepool.
Oh, it's very lovely, there's just nothing there.
Oh, poor Hartlepool.
Mm.
While we're on the subject of air quality, though, going back to air quality...
Okay.
The emperor, as we all know, the emperor of Japan recently abdicated, and there's a new emperor now, and we've changed eras. We've gone from the Heisei era to Reiwa era, and I've got to try and work out how to write the kanji for Reiwa, because in Japan you have to write out the date using the Japanese calendar system.
Ah.
It's a little bit tricky, a little bit annoying, but also kind of cool. But one thing they've done to commemorate the Heisei era... A community actually started canning air. Before the new emperor took over, they went around and they bottled up and they canned up all the air and started selling it as Heisei air. So you can have your own slice of an era. A little bit weird, but it might be the best $10, the best $9.70 ever spent. They're being sold for 1,080 yen. Are you going to buy one, Pete? Are you going to get your slice of the Heisei era?
Thing is, it's the sort of thing I find like ridiculous, like moon rock and I don't know, like Glastonbury. In a certain year, you'll see people flogging bits of turf on eBay and stuff from the Glastonbury way. I don't know, Beyonce did a thing. People buy these things, and they're, you know, a nice little keepsake stuff. But like, yeah, can of air. I do want one now, you see it. What I would say is it would be hilarious if it was just a long joke, a big joke on everyone, on tourists and stuff, and in every can, someone's done a little blow-off, and they open the can 20 years down the line. Oh, it stinks! Someone's farting in it. Yeah, disgusting.
Surely it would just stink anyway after several decades, like a can of air. I don't know.
It'd be quite still, wouldn't it? Yeah.
At what point do you... open the can of air? At what point do you just think, right, now's the time.
This is what the pastel
slice of
like
air
kids.
And open it.
Yeah, I guess when you'd put it in the ground, wouldn't you? You'd put it in, but then the cans would start to rot. You'd have to look after it really carefully because after a while, aluminium cans do start to rot. And what if what if you added some loose gallium in your cupboard, and that got on the aluminium and made a hole in it, and Oh, it's just a nightmare I don't need, to be honest. I'm not buying a hermetically sealed kind of humidor for my, or non-humidor for my can of aluminium, just to keep this air safe. What I'd do is I'd get it home and instantly open it and go, oh, done that now, throw it in the bin, right in the bin.
Well, to be fair, it is 1,000 yen. That's not exactly a great deal of money. Then again, it might be worth more. Imagine if he bought a can. And this is probably the only reason I'd actually consider buying it. Mm. But in 100 years, somebody might buy it for ridiculous sums of money.
That's the thing about mass market products. We all think that these things are going to be they're going to be worth a lot. People collect comics and magazines and CDs and records and stuff. But fundamentally, they're not, say you spend, I don't know, 50 quid on a nice bit of vinyl or a great comic from back in the day. You'll wait 10 years and it'll be worth 55 quid or 60 quid. They never massively go up in value because everyone knows everything. People are still talking about Nintendo NES carts. I can't remember the one that's the rarest. I think it's some kind of track and field game. And A, you never find them. B, they're usually in terrible states of disrepair. And C, value your time more. Value the space in your house that you've got to keep and drag this bloody cartridge from house to house. Just value yourself more. Make money elsewhere. Gamble. I don't care how you do it. Just don't put all your... There are people. There was a shamed TV presenter called Rolf Harris in the UK. Bought his... He was known as being this kind of eccentric, kind of Australian character. He went down for statutory rape or certainly sexual molestation of a child. And people had bought paintings. So he's quite a gifted artist. And people bought paintings thinking that he would be... That these would be worth a lot of money. He was still Rolf Harris before he got arrested. He was still this kind of talented yet he's just a TV presenter, no one's going to be spending money on Rolf Harris pictures 50 years from now. It's not a family heirloom. Oh, I just get so angry, Chris.
I think it could be, Pete. I think vintage air could be the new vintage wine. And I know this because...
I'm going to start selling Brexit air.
Japanese people certainly would. I remember the day I climbed Mount Fuji many summers ago, just before I started the climb, you get to the fifth station, the base camp area, and I went in a shop and they were selling cans of air from the peak of Mount Fuji. And I know you're going to Mount Fuji in a few months, probably.
Yeah, hopefully,
if you get your act together. Mm. And so why not grab a can there and we can review it in a video or a podcast? You can open it on the podcast and describe the scent of Mount Fuji air to us all.
I reckon they probably add an additive like mint or something to make it taste and smell really fresh. But you have these cans on the top of Mount Fuji. I'm sorry, who's got a can plant? How would they do this? Would they fill a big vessel, take that vessel down from the peak of Mount Fuji? I'm not buying it, Chris. No one's testing that. No, there is no body that would waste any of their time and resources to test the air, the things that are in the air to make sure it's definitely from the peak of Mount Fuji.
Do you reckon there's a 75-year-old man who's been doing this his entire life, just going up Mount Fuji every day with half a dozen cans and bottling air and then bringing it right back down again to sell off for 500 yen? That could be a great video. A great biography. But there you go. Air. Buying air. I don't know how I'd feel if someone invited me into their house and just revealed a room full of cans of air. But I think I'd be slightly impressed. Don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think, guys? What do you make of air? Would you buy air? let's get off the topic of air and go to the Brought in Japan fax machine.
Hey.
What have we got this week, Pete?
We've got an email from Michaela. Or Michella, maybe. Hi, Chris. I'm Michaela, or Michella, from Italy. I'm going to go with Michaela. Thanks for always cheering me up when I feel down. Oh, that's sad to hear. Don't be down, please. There, that's sorted. I have a story from my time in Japan. It was December 31st when I had two strange encounters. I was with my classmates and we were wandering in Hiroshima, wondering what to do before going to the nearest temple to eat taiyaki. We were sitting down in front of a konbini, and two drunk Japanese guys approached us and gave us six cans of beer. We humbly received the beers, and I gave them two candies. I stole them at the hotel we were staying at, and they were super happy about that. At some point, we heard the sound of a bottle smashed to the ground. It was a bottle of beer that some guys had dropped in front of us. I thought that I could give them our beer, so I shyly approached them and gave them the cans. They looked surprised and asked in poor English why I would do that. I finally started speaking Japanese to explain, and when the shock was over, the leader of the group of friends started making weird pauses and crying weird English sentences. It reminded me of Natsuki, and also the guy was a hairdresser, just like Natsuki. Are all hairdressers in Japan just like that?
Yes.
We were having a nice chat. Oh dear. I didn't read the rest of this email. We were having a nice chat when at some point I heard him whispering, "Mura mura shimasu," which means I'm horny. I was the only Italian girl who knew what that meant. And when I told him I could understand what he said, he suddenly cried out, "Shintai! I want to die." We all got drunk and went to the temple. It was a really pleasant way to begin the new year. So, starting the new year of... doesn't say what year it was. With a horny, drunk man who wants to die. Quite a story.
This is such a weird story. I don't even know where to begin with this story.
Yeah,
it's quite a nice setting, though. I mean, my first New Year's Eve in Japan was quite similar. Mm. I met some guys at 7-Eleven, two Japanese guys. I was with a friend, and we exchanged like beers and had a chat, and off we went. And it feels remarkably similar to that, although I don't think the guys I was with were particularly horny or wanted to die.
No. Well, they do say that sex is a little death, an orgasm.
I didn't know this, actually. I didn't know "mura mura shimasu" means I'm horny. I didn't know that phrase. I never felt like I needed to learn it in Japanese.
Do you really need the... I mean, shimasu is like to do, isn't it, kind of thing? So like...
Yeah, yeah.
Mura mura. Just say mura mura mura.
Mura mura.
Mura mura.
Vocabulary of the week. And shinitai, to die. I want to die. That might be fun. That might be a useful one to
shinitai.
You. Yeah, there you go. Wow. Anything you'd like to add to the story? Any thoughts on this, Pete?
I'm horny. does leave some enjoyable English below in her email. And there's these wonderful little cups with cats and I think doors, like a kind of cityscape. Some of the phrases on the side. Beloved town, you want to stay long town. You want to stay long town. You want to stay long town.
What's that
Love
all
it.
About? Yes.
God knows.
If I don't know where she found these cups. What a weird thing to have stamped on the side of a cup. You want to stay long town. Do you think they just accidentally wanted to say you want to stay long time?
Or possibly, long time in the town. I don't know. It's
I find if you question Japanese English, English, Japanglish too much, it'll just drive you mad because there is usually not much reason involved. We've got a question here from Patrick. Hey, Chris and Pete, my name's Patrick and I'm from Florida, originally Orlando. I often listen to the podcast whilst making the drive between a few cities or riding the bus and my bike to and from class. I was listening to the podcast this week and I heard that Pete is considering climbing Mount Fuji out of season. My friends and I made that same decision about this time last year and I'd say Pete should definitely go for it. It makes it so much more intense and gives better bragging rights for sure. For bonus points, climb it during a typhoon like we did. You'll probably get to the summit. Just don't try to cross the ridge's apex, lest you be blasted by sustained 65-mile-per-hour winds that get funneled in by the structures. Patrick. There you go, Pete.
Yeah.
Well, if you are climbing in June when you come, then it would be out of season by 1 month, and you probably would die.
How did
you should definitely do it.
How did Peter die? What a bragging rights. I always knew I'd go that way.
I love the image of you just like getting to the summit of Mount Fuji and falling to your knees like Platoon when the guy has his arms outstretched and just taking a big sniff of Mount Fuji air from the can and then just like dying.
It's better. It's actually, better than the can. This is so much better than the can.
Yeah. Have you thought any more about climbing Fuji?
Yeah, I've got a little plan together. I mean, it's only about a week out of season, so hopefully there won't be quite as many people. It just means that the stations won't be open. So yeah, I've got a little plan. It might come to fruition, it might not, but I'm planning on definitely having a crack. It doesn't seem like it would take too long if you choose your starting point. I just always sort of think, because I'm not any sort of climber, and obviously all of the climbers out there would be going, oh, you're disgusting and you're going to die. It's a walking, you can walk up it, and I sort of thought, I always sort of think of mountains as, they're not very well signposted, and obviously Mount Fuji and all of the different routes up are quite well kind of signposted in that they've got like stakes in the ground and kind of ribbons to take it up and stuff. To let you know exactly where you need to be going. So as long as I can follow that, I reckon I'll be all right. I will be with friends.
Are you going with someone? You're not going alone, are you?
No, I'm going with a bloke who's in the Navy who's probably done this sort of thing before, so probably all right. Just got to get those little walking sticks. Those little walking sticks.
Oh, you need a walking stick.
They're pretty cool. They're pretty cool.
It's half the fun. Pretend you're Gandalf or something. Good luck. Well, yeah. Right, but you're going to film it, right? You can have my GoPro if you want.
I'll stick your GoPro on my head.
Fuck yeah. Fantastic. Got one from Jose. Hey, Chris and Pete. Greetings from Puerto Rico. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, usually listening to it on my way back home from college as a sort of relaxation therapy after an exhausting day. My question goes out to you, Chris. I'm a huge fan of your YouTube channel as well. So I wanted to ask, when looking for ideas to make new videos, what's the most important part to you? I know you've spoken about many things before, but when looking for the message you want to send, what do you think is the most importance? Keep up the good work, Jose from Puerto Rico. I don't know. What do you think I look for, Pete? Answer my question for me. A good answer.
I don't know. I think you probably think, I've said on more than one occasion, you think way too hard about it.
Definitely do. Definitely.
But you've got a pretty good nose for different places that nobody else is doing, and that's the main thing. If you go on YouTube, there are absolute chances just going around Tokyo, walking around Shibuya Crossing, going, look at this, look at this can of fucking, like, basically just look at this bottle of Coolish, look at this vending machine, there's vending machines for everything nowadays, etc. It's just that really, but having a nose for it.
That felt like a glimpse into a Pete in Japan yet again.
Yeah, exactly. Look at this, I'm going to have a Starbucks and I'm going to just, it's basically like a normal Starbucks but it's harder to order things. I'll have a macchiato, please. And now I'll go into HMV. They still have HMVs out here. They sort of sell cassettes. And now into Al Price. Now into Tokyo Hands for a 3-hour video about how much I love Tokyo Hands.
I want to see it happen.
So it's basically that.
Yeah, I guess I always try and find something different, a little bit original if I can. But most above all, I just want to try and tell a story. If it's something weird, wacky, a person, a place, you know, you always want to try and tell a story. So I guess that's it, really. And above all, just have fun with it. If it's something you're not interested in, it's not going to work. You're not going to find the motivation to power on through and spend the long evenings hunched over your laptop editing it or producing it in some way. So, yeah, it has to be something you're interested in, something original and something with a story to it, a little bit of a narrative. So. That's my thoughts on that. We've got one from James here. Do you want to read that out, Pete?
All right, then. James Harmer. Hello, James Harmer from Perth, Western Australia. Huge fan of the podcast. Thanks, mate. Oh, stop, James. Is there any movement in Japan to ban smoking inside restaurants and bars, etc.? I found this is one of the only things I don't like about Japan. Does this bother you guys? Keep up the great work. Does it bother you? Chris, having a tab.
It kind of does. I did smoke for a bit. When I first came over here, I just finished university and I used to do social smoking, like all the cool kids, you know, you go out for a drink and you smoke. But when I came over here, all my friends that I worked with, who I'd go out drinking with, would smoke and we'd sit in an izakaya and it was quite nice, you know, beer in one hand, cigarette in the other, eating, drinking, smoking your way through the evening. And then I stopped about 2 years ago, much to Natsuki's disappointment because he likes smoking together. But I stopped and now I don't really like it because it isn't fun sitting there eating something, eating your fried chicken and having smoke waft over into your face. So I'm not overly keen on it. Sometimes it's kind of cool. There is something romantic, I guess. Like, I guess it feels like you're in a film when you're sitting there at the bar watching an old guy drink his whiskey and smoke. There's something kind of cool about that. But then I guess there isn't, and it's kind of annoying. And I know they're phasing it out or doing their best to get rid of it in the run-up to the Olympics. So right. I guess that's another good thing that's come from the Olympics in Japan. Less smoking indoors. So that's always good. I don't imagine you like it, Pete, do you?
Your clothes just absolutely pong after a night out or just an evening out at a restaurant. It just absolutely stinks all of the time. So it's kind of I find that quite difficult. But on the other hand, just take you back to the 80s. Just take me back to the early 90s. Yeah, I remember smoking trains. Like, you used to be able to smoke on planes. I'd never been on a plane at that point, but there were certainly carriages where there'd be a smoking carriage, and you walk through there, and it was like, bloody hell, this is just thick with smoke. And you just obviously don't see that anymore for obvious reasons. But there is a little bit. There's a little tickle in my brain that goes, oh, that smell does remind me of my youth.
I love every documentary about Japan from the 90s or before. It's just usually a series of shots of various people smoking in bars and drinking whiskey. That basically is what Japan's all about.
There is some wonderful footage that somebody located, which was basically... back in the day, there were certain emerging technologies, high-definition video for one. Back in like the late 80s, I think it was, early 90s, this stuff was going on. And basically, someone went around Japan with a brand new HD. Because we think of HD as being, you know, probably like 10 years ago at the earliest. The technology's existed forever, just obviously the delivery mechanism is the thing that always takes the longest to get to market. And so this guy just went around with a really decent high-def camera with high-def, I presume they'd be on DAT tapes or something, and filmed Tokyo. And it's so... I'll link you the footage, Chris, but it's so interesting to see such high-definition footage of a bygone era of, you know, Akihabara and Shibuya and Tokyo and stuff like that. People with like really women with like Spice Girls heels on and like little mini skirts and stuff, and but it's all in high def, and all of the screens, obviously, like nowadays the LCD, the blue LED, has taken over the world, and obviously everywhere is just saturated with LED screens and LCD screens, but like it's weird sort of seeing the same sort of thing but with loads of big thick cathode ray tube televisions back in the day. It's a fascinating bit of footage. I'll send it over.
When you say back in the day, what day are we talking? What era?
Well, it's like 80s, early 90s, I think.
Cool.
You know what? I think it might even be earlier than that. It might even be early 80s, but I don't know. I'll chuck it over though.
Wonderful.
Maybe we can tweet
can
it
we find
out.
That on YouTube? Can anybody
Yeah, it's
find
on
that?
YouTube. We'll tweet it out.
Awesome. Cool. Sounds really cool. For now, though, guys, I think that's about it. Do I have anything else to add to that? No. Just if you, if you don't like smoking indoors, most Japanese places have an option to sit in a smoking area or a non-smoking area, and they do a good job separating them as well. So, you know, just if you don't want to be in a, if you want to go inside a restaurant but you don't want to be in the smoking area, just make that clear to staff. It's usually the first question they ask when you walk through the door, smoking or non-smoking.
Yeah.
Make sure you end up in the right one. but for now, that's it. Keep the stories, questions coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. But for now, we'll be back same time next week, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world. Have yourself a great week, and we'll be back next Thursday.
This show is part of the Radio Stikhanov Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.